Now, three African case studies have shown how workers are recasting their power in the digital age. From US car factories to public sector workers in Nigeria and South Africa, strikes by trade unions continue unabated among the established sectors of the working class. In Detroit, in the US, workers are resisting contract employment. In Nigeria, they are angry over the rising cost of living. And here in South Africa, municipal workers are striking for better wages. Distinguished researcher Professor Edward Webster at the Southern Center for Inequality Studies at WITS wrote an article in The Conversation discussing this phenomenon. And we talked to Professor Webster this morning. Professor Webster, good morning and welcome to Radio Islam International.
Good morning, Anisa.
Thank you for being with us this morning. And this is pretty interesting. I was looking at Detroit and the strikes taking place there with this thought in my mind. It's odd to see people in America striking.
Well, yes and no. I mean, what's particularly interesting is that they're starting to strike over the new digital technology, in other words, artificial intelligence. And the Writers Guild of America, which is essentially the writers at Hollywood, have just won a major victory by not only getting increases in income, but also in the right to regulate the use of artificial intelligence by the company. So yes, no, there's a new strike wave. But Anisa, you know, my article is based on a book that I've written called Recasting Workers' Power, Work and Inequality in the Shadow of the Digital Age. And what I'm really focusing on is not on these established workers. What I'm interested in is the growing number of casual workers, sometimes on the periphery of the economy, they could be street traded, or the men who, and the largely men who deliver your food for Uber Eats, for example. My focus is more around the kind of innovation in organization that they are using, which quite often isn't the strike weapon that they are using.
All right. Now, how difficult, has building sustainable workers' organizations become as companies employ more people in this, you know, casually, especially in the digital age that we have?
Now, that's an excellent question, Anisa. I think, you know, the labor movement was built around workers coming together in large numbers, collectively in factories. What's happened in the digital age, and it's been something happening over a number of decades, is workers become more isolated and individualized. See, somebody like a food courier who will be is classified as self-employed. He's on his own. He operates through a phone, and very isolated. So you don't have the kind of collective gathering that where the labor movement is built, and of course, you know, classified as self-employed, they have no worker rights. So it's much more difficult to organize. But what our book shows, and that article is looking at, is how workers are experimenting with new forms of organization, associations, not traditional trade unions, but like a stock sell, you know, where you share credit. You look after, you show solidarity. So the central thrust of what I'm trying to show in that book is that new forms of organization are emerging in the digital age.
Yes. Now, in your book, what examples are there of workers using this power?
Well, the best example I always think of is food couriers using their phones through WhatsApp to communicate with each other and establish these kind of hybrid form. It's not a trade union, but they come together and discuss their conditions of work. They even organize strikes, but it's not a traditional trade union. It's a bit of a hybrid, a mixture of an association. And then the one that we mentioned in the book is what's called the Brothers of Melville. Now, these are a group of immigrants who come together and share their knowledge and think of ways in which they can give solidarity to each other. Because one of the big things about
this kind of work is dangerous. People get run over, knocked down, and they give support for each other. So it's a kind of solidarity which underlies the idea of trade union, but it's not a traditional trade union.
Yes. So basically, it's taken the idea of a trade union and sort of changed it into something a little more different than what we normally used to seeing across the world. And looking at that now, you are challenging the dominant narrative that new technology has basically destroyed workers' power. Explain that to us.
That's exactly it, Anissa. It's a kind of contradiction because, on the one hand, the new technology exercises great control over these riders because it tells them where to go, tells them what to do, can cut them off. But on the other hand, it's a double-edged sword, that technology, because it brings them together online so they can connect with each other and start to mobilize. So in that sense, it's kind of, I call it a double-edged sword, the new technology.
So tell us more about the three sectors that you put your focus on, the factory workers in Ekurhuleni, the food couriers in Johannesburg, and then also looking at transport workers in Kampala in Uganda. What were your main findings when you looked at these sectors?
Well, I think the main finding, Anissa, is that the general view is that these kind of casual workers are unorganized, because of their isolated and vulnerable nature. You know, they can easily be replaced because there are many other people who can do these jobs, because many of them are not all that skilled. But what we found is not that they are, in fact, already organized, not into traditional trade unions, in the case of the food couriers in Johannesburg, but into these kind of Stockfeld-type associations that I mentioned to you. In the case of Ekurhuleni and the factory workers, yes, they're starting to organize into committees at factory level rather than established trade unions. And they're beginning to, in particular, use the quite progressive labor relations system, the law, in other words, to use the law, and either by going to the CCMA, where you can, you know, where you can get reinstatement or win rights, or in terms of the amendment to the Labor Relations Act that now argues that if you are employed for 3 months, that you are deemed to be permanent, and they challenge the court. So it's an ongoing struggle. So in that case, they're using what I call institutional power, the law. In the case of Uganda, it's a different case. These are very interestingly what's happened in Kampala and Uganda is that with privatization of public transport, you saw the emergence of motorbikes. They call them border riders, and these people were organizing themselves into what I call associations, and they approached the trade union, and the trade union brought them in. And in the process, they were able to double the size. Well, doubled it. They went from 5,000 members to 100,000 members. So they revitalized the union.
Yes.
And I think the key point here is that instead of seeing these informal workers, casual workers, as simply outside of organizing the trade union movement, they actually saw them as fellow workers, drew them in, and were able to transform the union. That's the case of Uganda.
That's pretty interesting. Now, listening to you talk about this, you know, lots of thoughts running through my mind right now. And one of them is this going to turn the whole idea of trade unions on its head? Because as workers who are, you know, come together and formed these trade unions and, you know, to fight against maybe their rights or fight for their rights, in this way, using the law also means that it may seem loosely put together, but at the same time, it could have a better financial implication for workers. It means they don't have to contribute towards, union fees and that kinds of thing. But also at the same time, they don't also have allegiance to political parties as such. Things like that come to mind.
No, that's you're quite right, Anissa. The way I'm thinking about it is that we're entering into an experimental phase which happens from time to time, because, you know, as the economy grows, it restructures work through new technology, and digital technology is a classic example. And new forms of work, new forms of organization emerge. And I think that we're at that moment. Essentially, what are we doing? By the way, I don't do this thing on my own. I work with other, fellow researchers. But I think what we're suggesting is that these new workers, your food couriers, working with an app, these new workers could become the basis for a new growth and new cycle of union development. But it's an experimental phase. I think things are in the balance, so it's not clear which way they're going. And I don't think we're suggesting that it's the end of traditional trade unions. It's just that the traditional trade unions are not responding to the specific nature of work as it is now, digital work in particular. And so you need to think of different ways of organizing. And I think that a very important point, Anissa, is that what I think is happening is that people who are self-employed, like the courier classified, are being defined then as workers in the sense, not that they're working for a wage, they're selling their labor, not for a wage, they're selling it for income. But as such, they need to have protection. They need to be protected against accidents and therefore covered by occupational act when they're injured. In other words, they need to be drawn into the labor relations system. And it doesn't mean that they cease to have that autonomy, because a big attraction of being an Uber rider is that you've got flexibility. You can start any time of the day, and you think you're your own boss, but you're not your own boss because the algorithm is telling you what to do.
Exactly.
So it does give you a degree of flexibility, and that you can. What we're looking for, and I think it's something new. And law isn't really, hasn't really caught up with it yet.
Yes,
how to give people rights, fundamental rights that they have, if they're injured at work, that they get compensation, etc. And at the same time, give them a degree of autonomy and independence, which is what they want. So I think, that's why we're essentially arguing in the book that we've entered an experimental phase, particularly in the global south, in Africa, where you have this large swathe of informal casual workers.
All right, so that's quite an interesting subject, and we'd like to find out more as your research, I'm sure, will continue, because this is something, as you said, ongoing as things change, particularly in the digital age where things change almost within a minute or two. So it would be interesting to see how this all pans out as we go further into this, and looking also at how the technology will bring about more changes, which will also then impact on your studies as well.
Well, I think what I'm suggesting is that we're on the edge of a new phase.
Yes.
And wherever capital goes, labor conflict follows, and we've got to now regulate this new form of work.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time. Much appreciated. And hopefully we'll be speaking to you a little more about this in the future.
Thank you, Anissa.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.